one of my friends look at me and say, "Hey, Pedro, have you ever considered anchoring your hand always in the same spot?" I was like, "Damn, that's a good idea."
Welcome to The Rich Outdoors, where we break down the tips, tactics, and strategies of hunting's greats to not only help you become better hunters, but to motivate and inspire you between hunting adventures. For more about us, including additional resources on our guests and links to everything we cover in the interview, check out therichoutdoors.net. Well, hello, hello, hunters and huntresses. Welcome to another episode of the Rich Outdoors podcast. Today's episode, we're chatting with my friend Pedro Ampuero. Pedro is an amazing hunter who's traveled the world and hunted probably more countries than most of us have even been to. Growing up and cutting his teeth bow hunting in Spain, Pedro has a drive and mindset for hunting that's something that we can all pull from to become better hunters and better outdoorsmen. We spent a lot of time chatting about hunting in Spain and Hawaii, but whether you're just looking to hunt in your backyard or hunting around the world, I think we can all take from Pedro to become better hunters. Pedro's outlook on hunting is not only motivating, but also has some interesting perspectives that would normally not think of. But first, a word from our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by Powder River Cartridge. Powder River is consumer direct, American made ammunition. Tired of heading to the gun shop only to find they don't have the ammo you're looking for? Check out PowderRiverCartridge.com. They have American made ammo that's fast shipping and great customer service. Tell them we sent you and get 10% off your next order with coupon code RO. And now, on to the show. Hey, Pedro, welcome to the show. How are we doing, buddy?
Hey, thanks, Cody, for having me here. It's a pleasure.
So how's the weather down in Hawaii?
It's warm. It's not it's kind of always the same. So it's beautiful compared to the winter that we have in Spain. So pretty cool. Very easy to get used to it.
Oh, I'm sure it is. So you enjoying that climate down there?
Yeah, my wife is loving it, especially.
So you're in Hawaii now, which is sounds like a rough life, doing all kinds of hunting in Hawaii. But originally you're from Spain. You grew up in Spain, and that's kind of where you learned to hunt. Why don't you give us a little bit about your background and tell folks kind of how you got started and into the bow hunting?
Yeah, I grew up in Spain, in the northern part in Bilbao. And I kind of like many of us, it's my family, my dad who introduced me in hunting. He's a really big time international hunter, and he has hunted all over the world. And he was the one who introduced me and who has taught me mostly all the ethics and about hunting and how to appreciate and respect the nature. So I feel pretty fortunate of having born in that family.
So how popular is bow hunting in Spain? Is there a lot of bow hunters and a lot of hunters in general?
It's getting more and more popular. Back in the days where I got introduced into bow hunting, there were just a few guys, but right now it's getting big in Spain. I think it's going to be the kind of the future, because every day it's harder to find places to hunt and to find tags, and in Spain it's very expensive. And bow hunting, with just one tag, you can really take the most of the season and enjoy spending time in the outdoors. That it's what really it's the point about hunting. So
you traveled around the world and you've hunted in a lot of different places. What's the hunting like in Spain, and how is the hunting culture around it?
Hunting in Spain, it's a really big thing. It's a small country, but we have like a lot of different areas. Like you have high mountain areas, you have thick forest, deserts. You have so much variety in terrain and in species that hunting it's a really big thing. No? You can do small game hunting, big game, mountain, thick forest, driving hunts. So it's really in the Spanish culture.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. I guess I didn't realize there was that much diversity in the hunting in Spain, and that sounds like I might need to visit. So you originally started rifle hunting and then switched to a bow. And how old were you when you kind of decided that the bow was something you wanted to pick up?
Yeah, I started hunting with the rifle with my dad, and when I got to 14 years old, it's legal to have a shotgun license. So I was able to go hunting by my own with a shotgun and a slug. And that season is when I realized that I like it to get really close to the animals, because with a shotgun and open sights, you cannot shoot farther than 50 yards. So I think I'm more precise now with the bow than with a shotgun with open sights. And all those encounters, just like that season, like, damn, I like to get really close to the animals. And that's when I found a bow in my house that my dad used to have, but he had an injury in the North Pole in the shoulder, so he couldn't shoot it anymore. And that's when I picked the bow and started hunting with a bow.
So what was the first animal that you actually took with your bow?
It was a wild boar, but my main objective, I have been always hunting for roe deer. I have grown up hunting roe deer all my life. So what I really wanted to is shooting a roe deer sporting stock, and that took me like 3 years, three seasons, to shoot my first one. So it was a tough time. I think that bow hunting, either you just fall apart in the first season, or you just keep loving more and more the challenge, and just keep trying harder and harder. And it was really special when I shot finally my first buck. So,
well, it's always really special when you have to work that hard for your first one. And I think that probably plays a lot into your passion for bow hunting. So were you just absolutely hooked from that point on?
It was so tough. The beginning is that there were not so many people in Spain that bow hunting at that time. And I used to have a black bear bow, shooting with fingers, no peep sight or anything. And I still remember, like, after 2 or 3 months of bow hunting with that bow, one of my friends looked at me and say, "Hey, Pedro, have you ever considered anchoring your hand always in the same spot?" I was like, "Damn, that's a good idea." And it's something that now you don't even, I mean, there is no way you don't consider to align your peep sight or to have a solid anchor or something. But it's something that I never thought about it.
So growing up in Spain and kind of learning to shoot a bow and learning archery and hunting and all this, did you have influences or mentors or was it kind of just a learn on your own? I mean, here we grow up and hunting's so commonplace and we all look up to the same people. You know, I grew up watching Wayne Carlton and these guys and so you replicate what they do or replicate what you see. Did you have that growing up, or who were some of your early influences?
Not really, just like friends that were bow hunting at that time of my life, because there was not so much, I was not reading so much about the internet, it's not that long time ago, but internet was not so popular, there was not so good information to get access to, so I was kind of learning from my friends around, and just like learning by my own, spending a lot of time doing the things wrong.
Well, I guess they say we learn from our mistakes. And I think lessons learned from our mistakes usually stick better than just advice we're given. But sometimes it can increase the learning curve if we have someone to tell us what we're doing wrong or what we're doing right.
Yeah, that's for sure. But I look back at some of the mistakes and I was like, I don't know, just so ridiculous. I spent like 1 year holding the release on the wrong way. You probably are thinking like, how do you help you hold your release on the wrong way? But there is a way to hold it wrong. So, until some point, one of your friends say like, why are you holding it that way? Don't you think that it's more comfortable like this? Like, whoa. So that was like my everyday, just like crazy things.
So as far as getting arrows or getting things for your bow and equipment and whatnot in Spain when you were growing up, was it something that you could order through pro shops, or how did you have to get it?
No, Cabela's. Ordering through Cabela's. So that was the only, there was probably like one pro shop, but just maybe for target and something, but all the things mainly from the US.
And I guess without having a pro shop, you probably had to learn to work on your own stuff. And I noticed that you do that as well, as you kind of do all your own work on your own bow.
I think it's really important to know your equipment and to understand it, to learn from your mistakes, rather than just assuming that you have made a mistake. Just try to learn why. And that typically makes a difference. And learning the bow just is something that with time you end up playing with it to understand it better. So
yeah, I think you're right there. I think being able to not only work on your own stuff, but being able to understand the mechanics behind everything gives you a deeper knowledge and makes you a better hunter in the long run. So outside of the logistical problems of Spain, as far as an archery hunter, what would you say the best part of growing up in Spain or growing up as a hunter in Spain would be?
I think probably that we can hunt 365 days per year. So that you have an idea, like the season in Spain kind of starts in April, and we have the roe deer, which is a 50-pound deer. It's kind of interesting that the reason they have horns during spring, that it's one of the only deer animals that have horns during spring, is because the females, they have the rut in July, and they kind of freeze July, August, and they kind of freeze that embryon for several months so that it starts growing back again, and they get birth during the springtime, which is the time of the year that they have more food for the fawns. And that makes us to have the roe deer with horns from April to October, which is pretty good. And that makes us hunt all spring for roe deer. I typically go in the spring too for chamois in the Pyrenees.
So is that when the rut is for the roe deer?
The roe deer in July, end of early August, that's when they have the rut. Which is it's kind of wise, because at the end they are having the rut way sooner than the winter, so that by the time the winter arrives they are strong again.
Huh. Well, that actually makes more sense. You should probably tell the whitetails and the elk over here that that's what they should do. Makes a lot more sense that way. Now, when I think of Spain, I think of ibex, and that the traditional Spain hunt to me would be an ibex. And obviously you have the roe deer like you were talking about, but what other game species do you guys have over there that you hunt?
Yeah, so in Spain the species that we have, it's we have four type of ibex. We have two types of chamois. We have mouflon, Barbary sheep, goat. We have red deer, roe deer, fallow deer. We have wild boar, wolf, fox. I don't know. I may have forgotten something else, but you can see that for such a small country, we have a lot of species. So
out of all the species that you are able to hunt, what's the best tasting, or what's your favorite to eat?
I would say red partridge. That's the kind of we always have for dinner in Christmas. Red partridge.
Really? So is that just a regular partridge then, or what kind of partridge?
Like the chukar, kind of the chukar, but it's like, yeah.
So similar to our chukar.
Yeah, we hunt them with dogs, with my dad and all that. So that's probably my favorite. And we look every Christmas to have the exact amount of partridges on time for the whole family. So there is a lot of pressure some years.
So in Spain, does it require a PH or a professional hunter, or what we would consider a guide? Or is there some DIY hunting and kind of do-it-yourself stuff in Spain?
The way Spain is organized, it's like way different to what you are used to in the States. And so you have mainly game reserves where you have to draw to get attack. And those are probably like the best hunting areas in Spain, but the conditions they give you to hunt over there are pretty tough. And you typically only hunt, you can only hunt for 2 days.
Wow, what a tough hunt.
Which for the bow is like, okay, you have attack for someone, you only have 2 days. And you have to go with a game warden. Which, if the game warden knows to hunt and really likes to hunt, it's nice. But sometimes you get some people that they don't, it's just for them their job and they are not passionate about it. So you are there with your bow and you only have 2 days. And so it's kind of tough. And the other option we have here in Spain, it's mainly that the towns, each of the towns, they own the rights for the game on their proper, on their terrains. So they kind of make an action and they lease the rights to hunt on their land for like 10 years. So you can, with a bunch of friends, go to that auction. You get the, you buy the lease for hunting in that area, and you can manage it for 10 years with your friends, however you want. The only thing is that it's the government who goes to the townland, analyze the resources, the animals, and defines how many animals you can shoot of each species, of each sex. But you have the own rights. So you can either shoot it for yourself, sell it to a friend, invite some of your friends. So it's kind of different. It's nice, but on the other side, it's expensive.
Yeah, I can see how that would be semi-problematic. I mean, there's ups and downs to that, I guess, but... Is that agency, or is that like an agency that's, or a government agency that would be similar to what we would consider a fish and game department?
Yeah, they are the ones that analyze, like, how every year they analyze how much game you can take. But it's not like in the US that the tax are like nominative, like for one person. Mm-hmm. Like you have your own tax. It depends on the land. So if you have that lease, if for example, I experienced the problem in the sometimes that I used to travel to for business to the US, and it's like, you know that you are gonna travel over there in 1 week in advance, and you make a few phone calls over there to some of your friends. It's like, is there something that I can hunt over there? And it's like, no, you should have applied in February for the draw, and then you have to. It's like, damn, you know, you're gonna be like 1 week.
Yeah.
Over there and say, I cannot bring my bow. That in Spain, if you have some money, you will find a tag like right away, because there will be always someone in one town that wants to sell you a tag. Or so it's not that complicated to get access.
So how much are we talking money-wise to be able to go hunt? So is this an expensive thing, or how expensive are we talking?
It depends a lot on the areas, on the species, but let's say like the lowest for a tag can go from $700 or something, and you can go as far as 6,000 or 10,000 euros for a mature ibex, depending on the area.
Yeah,
and it all depends on contacts and all that. But
so is ibex kind of the expensive species to hunt?
Yeah, because it's the animal that most foreign people wants to come to hunt it. So as you have more guys from abroad coming to Spain to hunt it, it's the animals and the species are more expensive.
So you grew up hunting in Spain, and it sounds like quite the experience. And you've now traveled all over the world and hunted many, many different countries. How old were you when you first started traveling abroad to go hunting?
The first time I went abroad, it was to... Well, I think I was 12 years old, and my father took me to the Nubian Desert in Sudan, in the northern part of Africa, and we went to over there to hunt for Barbary sheep. That's the native Barbary sheep, and also for the Nubian ibex. Hmm. So it was kind of a different hunt for Africa that you never think on Africa on a mountain ibex hunt. And also on exploring the desert for Barbary sheep.
Yeah,
which was pretty cool to go to chase them in their native environment.
So how many countries have you hunted in now?
A bunch. I don't know. I will have to count them, but I have been. My dad loves to travel the world, so I have been very lucky that he takes me.
So is it more, do you guys like to hunt in new countries or just explore new countries, or is it always a new adventure, or is there places you like to go repeatedly?
It's a little bit of everything. One of the things that we don't do is like look into the Safari Club Ibex list or whatever and say, okay, we are missing this animal. It's more like, hey, Dad, let's go to the Karakoram Range. No? And then you start exploring the different countries, what animals you have over there. Or let's go, my dad, like, I haven't never been to the Mackenzie Mountains. Hey, that would be nice to do a backpack hunt. We have not done a backpack hunt in the last 2 or 3 years, no? I need to go back again. And they're like, okay. And then you start exploring and say, okay, let's go for goat, for doll, for, you know. So it's more like searching for the adventure rather than, I think that we would rather go 10 times for hunting moose in Canada than just going for a new species or whatever. Just, I don't know.
So being a guy that has traveled the world, who has experienced the hunts that you have, what would you consider an adventure, or what does the term adventure hunt mean to you?
For me, it needs to, like, nature has to surprise you. You don't have to have everything like planned and you know to know exactly what's going to happen. You need to have that like nature to surprise you with different things and the plane changes, and that's the adventure. When you don't know what you're going to get.
What you're going to find.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we all kind of define adventure as the unknown, and that can be a good thing and a bad thing sometimes.
Yeah, you have to assume that you, especially for example, if you go to Asia, you have to assume that you're not going to get what you were expecting. So yeah, no. You arrive to the airport and they tell you that they change your areas, that you are going to hunt with a different guy, and that you are. So you have to assume, but that's part of the adventure, part of why you like to go out of your comfort zone. You know.
Oh, absolutely. That's definitely an adventure. So what's the most adventurous hunt you've been on? Is it Asia with just the experience of it, or Africa, or what would you say the biggest adventure has been so far?
It's really, really hard to say, but if I would have to say my favorite, it's probably the Northwest Territories for Dolship. Really? Because I think that still to date, the north part of Canada is the wildest place on earth, because there's no one. Because you go to Asia and you go like as far as you want, but there's always houses, there's always a little road. But when you go to the northern part of Canada, there is no one. They drop you with a bush plane, and you know that you're alone with your guide and your backpack, and that's it.
How old were you the first time you went to Canada?
To Canada, like I think 18. We went to the Yukon for hunting moose, 15 days. I think we only saw one moose in the 15 days and was really, really far away. I actually took my longbow to that hunt, because I used to have my black bear and used to have the pins of my bow at 12 yards, 15 yards, and 18 yards. So the drop of my arrow was so big, and I didn't have a rangefinder. So I said, like, damn, I'm moving to the traditional. So I remember I took my longbow to that hunt in the Yukon.
So what was your thought when you first got dropped off and flew in there? Was that the first experience to, you know, the North American mountains and wilderness?
Yeah, it's like what you have always dreamed as a kid and what you have always read. And the first time I was dropping like in the wilderness was in Wyoming, close to the Teton National Park with my dad, hunting for bighorn sheep. My dad was lucky to draw one of the tags over there. And I will never forget that first day when you get all the horses and you get on the horse and just start getting inside the wilderness. That, I mean, it's hard to don't fall in love in that thing. I still actually remember the face of my guide, that he looks back to me and I was so happy with my horse, just like smiling ear to ear. And he looks at me like, that smile is going to change sooner or later. And I don't know how many hours we spent in that horse that day, but like maybe 16 hours. So my legs were broken. I was so tired. We got lost. We didn't found the camp. We had to sleep overnight in the middle of the forest with the horses. I don't know. But I still remember that look.
Well, did you still have the smile on your face?
Yeah, always. the smile is always inside, but sometimes it starts hit, the body starts hurting too much, and you kind of.
So when does Pedro ever get tired of hunting, or does he just go?
It's hard to.
A guy that hunts as much as you do, it's very impressive. I mean, how many days a year are you hunting? It seems like every day.
not every day, but I was typically doing like a little bit over 100 days per season.
That's a good number.
Yeah, so, but it's like what I think every day, and I just enjoy every different aspect. So I don't really care if it's just for tracking for a friend with my dog or just going scouting or just walking. It's something that I have to do.
Yeah, so. I understand that completely. So as Americans, we kind of see this anti-hunting issue, and it seems to be growing and growing and growing. And I mean, now you're in Hawaii, so you probably see it a little bit there as well. But being that you have traveled and you kind of experienced all these different cultures, and I mean, you're from Europe, from Spain, and you've seen that aspect of it. What do you see as the world view on anti-hunting, and how is it different from what we see as Americans?
I think that as far as you go out of the cities and far of nature, you have more movement of anti-hunting, and it's just because they don't know about it and they don't know what it takes. But for example, you go to Africa, and I have asked some of my trackers and guides in Africa about anti-hunting, and you get that look on their face like, I don't get it. What do you mean? Like, no, people that are against hunting, like, I don't get it. And what do they eat? You know, it's just so basic for them, like how someone cannot understand hunting. So how he survives. But as soon as you start getting away from the nature and just starting getting to the cities and all that, it just harder. And actually, I think it's tougher in Spain than what you guys have here in the U.S.
Oh, really? So is hunting frowned upon in Spain then?
I mean, it's the movement against hunting in Spain, it's tougher than in the U.S. And it's a matter of the culture. And I think that in the U.S., the way hunters have worked together to defend and to transmit those values of hunting and the ethics and all that has been done way better than in Spain. And that's what we have right now in Spain. But we are just working and trying to educate the people on why we do it, how we do it, and how we benefit for everyone.
I mean, that's what this is about. This is like, we had this conversation about, you know, putting our best or marketing our best self. And I think it doesn't matter where you go in the world, in the country, you have to market it. And a lot of people don't see that, or they get the wrong image of hunters. Like you said, if you're a tracker in Africa, you don't understand why people don't like hunting. But if you live in a city in Spain, or whether it be in the United States, you're pretty far removed from hunting. So it can not make as much sense to those folks.
Yeah, you lost track of where things come from and the effort it takes for the things to appear in your table and all those kind of things. So
in Hawaii, is that a big issue? It seems like Hawaii is not necessarily known for its hunting. Have you have a lot of people looked at you funny for hunting there?
No, it's actually, I think, more like the opposite. Like hunting here, it's a really big thing, and everyone kind of understands that you live from the land and from the sea. Mm-hmm. So it kind of surprises you on the other way how so many people are involved into hunting, how they are at least understand it, and how you see the feeling that you live from the land and from the sea. So
it's pretty receptive then, and people don't give you the dirty eye for being a hunter. How's the hunting pressure? I know you mentioned the other day we were talking, and you were talking about rifle hunters. Is it pretty heavily pressured? Is there a lot of hunting pressure in Hawaii?
Yeah, especially in public areas. I'm right now in Maui, and basically there is only one public area which have goat's peaks, and I have heard that there are some deer over there. And the other public areas are mainly for wild boars with hunting with knife. So imagine all this such amount of hunting of hunters around, and only one public area. That area is full of hunters. I mean, the first day I went there, I don't know if I saw like 11 rifle hunters around me. So I was just like wearing a small orange vest, and I was like, damn, I should have bring a hat, probably I don't know. I should have been way more orange.
Yeah, no kidding. You see, I wouldn't have thought of as Hawaii is that bad, but I guess so. It's probably pretty discouraging when you're trying to bow hunt and you got 11 rifle hunters all around you.
Yeah, the thing is that what you have to go, it's like farther than the rest of the people are wanting to go. So if you go far, you find game, but you really have to work harder than the rest. I don't know, like a couple of weeks ago, started walking like 5 in the morning, 5:30 or something like that, and arrived in the car at 9 in the afternoon. And you are hunting here like between 7 and 8,000 feet of elevation. So the terrain is pretty steep.
So you left at 5 in the morning and didn't get back to your car till 9 o'clock at night?
Yeah, and actually it was funny because the game wardens were waiting for me in the car. Like, what the hell are you doing? It's this time of the night. You should have left from here at 7. I was like, do you have water? I just spent 16 hours hunting. I shot 2 goats and a wild boar. So I had like, I weighed my backpack in at home. It was like 117 pounds of meat on my backpack.
Wow.
So I was destroyed. Well, I arrived to the guy, you have water. You can put me a ticket or whatever, but just give me water. No, and they were fine. They understood that I didn't want to leave all the meat behind.
Yeah.
So it just took me way longer to get to the car than I was expecting.
Imagine it's you probably got to take that meat out. You can't just leave it overnight because it's not getting very low in temperatures there at night, is it?
No, I'm not walking back again. it's so steep and so far deep in that if you get it, just take it out. Just making another trip the day after, just I'd rather die in pain. That day, just probably coming back the next day.
So is Hawaii a much harder hunt than you thought it was going to be?
It's a lot of fun. One of the hard things about, in this case, Maui, is the access, especially for here in the island, you have goats, wild boar, and axis deer. Axis deer is just like the hardest animal to get probably in Hawaii. So it's the one I really more enjoy by far. I enjoy hunting axes a lot because it's very similar to hunting roe deer in Spain. But the hard thing is to get access because all the hunting for axes deer is private. So you really need to have a friend to invite you to their area. So you are kind of on a weekend just looking to your phone like, is someone gonna call me to go out? Which is kind of frustrating to be being used to hunt in Spain, in my own areas, and hunt, go whenever I want, go alone and all that. Just having that feeling of waiting for the call, just it's killing me.
That's tough. Yeah, you mentioned you were supposed to go this morning, and then that didn't pan out. So you didn't get to go axis deer hunting this morning, huh?
No, and it's just the ride is to start. It's to start to warm up. So axis deer are calling. I hear the axis deer around my house, and I can't do nothing. So
the axis deer rut is going on right now, then?
Yeah, it's starting up. Oh. It's warming up, so they start screaming in the afternoons and in the morning. So
habits-wise, what is the axis deer kind of similar to in hunting? Is it like an elk, or is it more like your roe deer, or what species can we relate that to?
The axis deer, I don't know, it's just... It remembers a lot to me to the fallow deer that we have in Spain. And they go in big groups, like one or two males. They may have like 5 to 10 does. So it kind of make it hard to get close because the areas are really thick here. The terrain is very thick. You have tall grass. You have thick forest. So you may be, it's so easy that one of the does just, it's around the corner and just pick your movement. But that's what it makes axis deer like fun. I mean, that's what I like, challenging things. So
yeah, there's only a few people in this world that enjoy the ultra challenging, and I think when you can derive pleasure out of one of the hardest animals to hunt, you know, and planning on the fact that you're not going to get to take one all the time, it takes a certain type of person.
Yeah, it's just you have to love the outdoors, and that's
you have to
above the kill. So
you have to love it outside of harvesting an animal.
Yeah, and if you don't love it, I think that bow hunting it's not for you. You are gonna fall apart sooner or later. You better love it, I guess.
So what's your dream hunt? What's the one hunt you still have not done yet?
I don't know. It's just like one of my favorite animals that I really would like to go. It's to go to Azerbaijan for the tour.
Where's that?
In Azerbaijan. It's like below Russia, in the southwest part of Russia, in the Caucasus Mountains. And that's like the meanest sheep that you can find of in the meanest terrain, and that's I need to go there. Just, I don't know, just
what drives you to that animal, what makes you want to go there?
If my dad has done all those hunts, so he kind of tell me like the stories and all that, and when he tells me the stories about Azerbaijan, he's like, that's the toughest hunt you can imagine. Like, damn, I need to experience that. I need to go there.
So did he actually, gotten one so far?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but one thing is with the rifle and just with the bow.
So are you going to go with a bow or with a rifle?
No, with a bow.
With a bow.
Yeah.
So when you go on your bow hunts, are you the type of person who does not pack a rifle so that you have to do it with a bow?
I typically pack a rifle depending on the hunt, but I have enough control of myself to don't use it. You know, I just only use it if it's like 100% needed. If I see an animal that it's suffering, I don't care to say that I shot it with a bow or with a rifle or whatever. I don't like animals to suffer.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm not bringing it to just to make a shortcut, but just for whatever it happens. But I really don't have the need to use it.
I think that says a lot about your self-control, Pedro. I don't think a lot of people can take a rifle with them and not have that feeling that they just have to use it on the last day or it's getting down to the wire and, you know, okay, let's use a rifle and get it done. And I know I don't even tempt myself with it. Last time I went to Alaska, I didn't take my long gun. I just took a bear gun because I knew I didn't want to even have to worry about tempting myself. I wanted to stick it out with a bow and to the end.
Actually, 2 years ago, I had my first opportunity on, I was on Norway's territories on a dull sheep hunt, and we saw the first legal ram, or like decent size ram to shoot on the last day of the hunt. And I had the rifle with me. I was like, I'm going to try with the bow. I don't care if I go empty handed or not, but I'm going to try with the bow. And you are talking about dull sheep hunt, which are really expensive. Last day of the hunt, first opportunity of the trip, which is not like I have missed five rams already. I got my chances and all that. It was the first opportunity, last day of the hunt, in a really expensive hunt. And it's just like, I'm going all for it with the bow.
Wow. That says a lot about your character. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, luckily it worked out, because if not, it would just, I mean, what's regretting right now?
We probably wouldn't be telling this story.
No, maybe this.
So if you could only hunt one species of animal the rest of your life, what would it be?
I would have to say like red deer or roe deer, but with my friends, like with my group of friends, like to hunt together with them, because that's, I think, or with my family, that makes the whole difference. It's not just the animal, but hunting with my good friends.
Yeah, I think a lot of people fall back to, you know, what they grew up on, and it doesn't matter, you know, the species. It's that the animal that you remember growing up, hunting with your friends, hunting with your family, and all those memories. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and that terrain that you have been hunting all your life, that you know, and you know that specific buck because you have been chasing it for the last three seasons, and I don't know, I think that makes a huge difference. I don't know.
Yeah, I grew up hunting blacktails and Roosevelts in Oregon, and it's some of the most jungly area you'll ever see. And it's generally raining every single day of season. And to most people, it's probably the most miserable hunt they've ever been on. But when you grow up with that, that's kind of like, that's your bread and butter. And that's what you always fall back to. And what, you know, when you come home, you enjoy to go hunt, probably like your roe deer.
Yeah, exactly.
What advice would you give to bow hunters who are looking to get better and kind of looking to improve in their hunting skills?
Yeah, I think that the best advice you can give someone is to enjoy. I mean, I see a lot of people that get just so focused on the kill and on getting and the objective, and that's that they lose the meaning of everything, that is to get out there and enjoy. If your objective is just to spend the day in the outdoors and have fun, you will be way more successful than if you are just thinking on your objective or just chasing that animal. It's just the last day, I need to get it. Just like, go out there and enjoy.
Yeah.
And actually, I think that you kind of see it when every time you go out in the outdoors without the bow or without anything, you always have like a good chance with that bug that you have never seen. And like, damn, I should have got my bow with me and all that. And I think it's just because you are just enjoying and you are just not focusing on just, you don't have an objective. You're just having fun. And if you have fun, you are going to train harder. You are going to hunt harder, longer. I don't know. So don't forget to have fun.
What advice would you give your 20-year-old self? If you could go back and give your 20-year-old self some piece of advice, what would it be?
That's a tough one. I have made so many things wrong that I don't know where to start. I should have a long talk with my 20-year-old. I don't know. Yes, learn quicker from your mistakes, because it looks like sometimes it takes too long to learn from your mistakes and you just make them over and over. But I think that there's nothing you can do with that. It's just the adrenaline that goes through that makes you lose your mind. But it's hard to make, just, but maybe enjoy. Just like I was saying, just have fun. And I remember when I was younger that you get obsessed with like, I need to get a buck this year. Just like, forget it. Just have fun, you know?
Enjoy it while it's there.
So,
what two pieces of gear, or what gear do you find that you are recommending to your friends and to your fellow hunters the most? Like, what two pieces of equipment do you find that you're like, you just have to try this?
if I would say like the gear, like clothing, I have found out like if you hunt with clothing that it's comfortable, it makes you be dry quicker, hunt more comfortable in all different kind of environments. It makes you hunt longer and just focus on the hunting. So that's kind of like many people don't value the clothing, but I think it's one of the things that has made me improve in my hunting the most, maybe more than the bow itself or a specific broadhead. And also the backpack. I have seen that the gear I'm using, it's Kuyu. And they come out with this concept of the backpack, which is a day pack, as light as any other day pack on the market, but they have this carbon frame on it, which makes you to be able to hunt farther. And if you get something, just put it on the backpack and come back. And that's like a clear example of the hunt I was telling you about in Hawaii for the goats. You just can't keep hunting with that backpack. So,
well, that's a perfect example right there. I mean, you were just out on a day hike that turned into a 16 hours and 117 pounds pack coming back.
Yeah, and just you can just put one goat in a backpack and just keep hunting rather than just say, okay, my day is over. I have to go to the car and try to take out this animal in two trips or just I don't know how. But so those two things I think rather than just like a specific arrow or bow or broadhead, I think that have made me be a better hunter. And I see that I recommend it or people ask me a lot about it.
So what's your advice on training? I know you hunt quite a bit. Do you also do some conditioning or training or what's your thoughts on the physical fitness side?
Yeah, I'm lucky that I hunt like every 2 or 3 days. So I try not to hit the gym. I think that it's sometimes I think that it's more useful to go scouting or just hiking outside than just working on your fitness, because the more time you spend in nature, the more you kind of understand it and move around it better and all that. So I would change any day at the gym for a day outside. And what I also do is shoot my bow a lot. I think that I have blown out so many opportunities by missing the actual shot that I just train a lot now with the bow.
So how many days a week do you shoot your bow?
Every day. I try to every day. So
that's good advice.
Not much, just like maybe 6 arrows, 10 arrows if... I don't, some days I focus on form, on specific issues of the form. And some days I'm just so broken, so tired that I just shot at 15 yards just to keep the form. And I really think that you have to keep a positive attitude on how you shoot and everything. So if one day I'm not shooting right, just stop shooting. But I always want to have in my mind that when that opportunity appears, I'm just gonna do it perfect.
Yeah, I think it's really important to develop that muscle memory. So when that opportunity comes, it's muscle memory and you don't have to think about it. It's just natural.
Yeah, that muscle memory and that confidence that everything is gonna work out and that positive attitude that, I don't know.
So what's in the future for Pedro? You got any big hunts coming up or just Hawaii? You're going to get that axis deer soon.
My objective right now is the axis deer. I want it really bad. But I will probably try to schedule something for this summer on Australia. Or I wanted to go to New Zealand, but it's kind of late already in the season.
Yeah.
But it's so far from Spain. The Pacific that I want to try to go over there this summer now that it's way closer than from Spain. So
true, take advantage of it while you're there.
Yep, definitely.
Well, already, any closing thoughts for us or any other advice for us?
I don't know.
Shoot more, have fun.
Shoot more, have fun. That's a good quote.
Good luck with the Axis deer this week and in the near future. We really hope you get one.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I keep you posted.
Yeah, keep us posted. And if people want to follow you, where's a good place to find you and check out more about you?
Yeah, like mainly in social media, like Facebook and all that. And I also come out last year with a website just to be able to put all my photographs and hunts together in one spot, pedroampuero.com. So
yeah,
if someone is really bored, he can stop there.
No, it's definitely worth checking out. It's a pretty impressive adventure to follow your hunting career. But I'll post links in the show notes for everyone to get to that and your Instagram and your Facebook as well. You're a pretty interesting cat to follow, and we look forward to seeing more from you.
Thanks.
Alrighty, Pedro.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for all the tips.
Okay. Thanks, Cody. Have a good one.
Hey guys, thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoyed the show and maybe even picked up a few tips along the way. Join us right here every Thursday morning for more interviews and great hunting tips. And be sure to help us out by leaving a review on iTunes. For more information about this show and the rest of our guests, check out the show notes for links and additional resources on our website, www.therichoutdoors.net.